You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Welcome to episode 7 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. Dan Jonker here. Before we get started, I want to show our appreciation for you, the podcast listener. New members of Coach Calls Timeout can now receive a free 7-day trial to sample everything we have to offer. That includes access to all the plays and drills in video format that you can download directly to your laptop, phone, or tablet. Play them at home, during practice, in timeouts, or send the files directly to your players to prepare for practices. To take advantage of the free 7-day trial, just go to coachcallstimeout.com, click Join Now, and use the coupon code PODCAST. I'll provide a link in the show notes at coachcallstimeout.com/7. That's the number 7. On the show today is Paul Weir. Coach Weir was recently named the head coach of the men's basketball program at New Mexico State University. He'll become only the third Canadian-born head coach of an NCAA Division I men's basketball team, and the first in over 50 years. This is another big step for Canadian basketball, and as you'll hear in the interview, although he's been coaching in the States for many years, he still maintains his Canadian roots. He also has a fascinating desire to constantly better himself, whether it's through education or coaching experiences. No doubt this is one of the big reasons he's risen through the coaching ranks. Let's get right to the interview. Welcome to Coach Calls Timeout. It's Brian Jonker here, and today I've got a really special guest for you. For the first time in 56 years, a Canadian has been named as the head coach of an NCAA men's Division I basketball program. Paul Weir of New Mexico State is here today, and we really appreciate, Paul, you taking the time out to join us today and to talk a little bit about your journey and how you've made it to become the head coach of New Mexico State. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So you've got a very, very interesting background. Not particularly old, but a lot of experience. You go from having played for a legendary CIS coach in Bob Bain at York, and then you find yourself in the States, from Iowa to Northwestern State and Louisiana, and now at New Mexico State. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got exactly to where you are today and being named the head coach at New Mexico State?
Yeah, sure. From York, I actually went to Don Bosco Catholic Secondary School in Toronto. Actually, Rob Ford was the football coach there too, but I was coaching there, and shoot, my goal was, at the time, was just to be a permanent high school coach and teacher at Don Bosco as I was finishing up at York, and developed a really good relationship with the administrators there, and the intent was to go to teachers college, and at the conclusion of teachers college, go back to Don Bosco. So in the midst of trying to find the right place to go and get that educational competency to teach at Don Bosco, I kind of said, hey, I really want to maybe go to the U.S. and be a graduate assistant somewhere. And man, this was back before emails and everything else, and I pretty much sent the letter to every school in America I could find. I had probably sent at least 300 or 400 letters to schools all across the country, and I probably got 2 or 3 back that potentially had some openings. One of them was at Northwestern State University in Louisiana, and they had a full graduate assistantship available, and I took it and went down, and shoot, I would say by the middle of that fall, I was hooked and really wanted to kind of continue in college basketball if I could. Obviously, as a Canadian and an outsider, I knew that was going to be challenging, but I definitely wanted to give it my best shot. And that's pretty much what I've been doing for the past 12 years. And that culminated about 3 weeks ago with finally becoming a Division I head coach.
What does a graduate assistant entail? What does that position entail?
You know, it really depends on the school you go to, the size of the school. I mean, you can go to a, you know, a Division II school and be a graduate assistant and have a lot of coaching responsibilities at times because they're relatively understaffed. You can go to a really, really big school like Kentucky or UCLA, and a graduate assistant will basically be a, you know, a towel boy. And I was doing it at a very unique school. It was a small Division I school that didn't have a lot of resources. So I actually got some decent coaching experience, but most of it was just running around doing all kinds of other stuff. It was a really small, kind of under-resourced school, and we chipped in doing all kinds of things around the department, around the program, things that you would never even associate with coaching. But those are the things you do when you want to start paying your dues in the profession.
And then how do you go from there to Iowa under Steve Alford? Is it the same thing, more letters, more at this point maybe you've...
You know, Craig Neal was an assistant with the Raptors for about 9 years. I worked with the Raptors organization for 9 years, and Iowa had started recruiting Canadian kids, and I kind of got to know them. And at the end of that year, they had an opening, and Craig kind of brought me in up there through kind of some mutual connections and obviously his connections back in Toronto.
And from Iowa, obviously, then you make your way to New Mexico State. How do you end up there?
After that, I had been 3 years kind of starting to kind of make my way in the profession, and they were kind of administrative positions, and I really wanted to get into coaching. I mean, after that 3 years of that, I just felt like it was time to become a coach, and New Mexico State had an opportunity where I was going to be able to transition into being an assistant coach, and at that time, it was time for me, and becoming an assistant coach in individual basketball is really hard, and once I saw that opportunity, I just took it.
And what impresses me as much as anything with your resume is that at every one of your stops, you didn't just do basketball. You got a master's degree at every one of the stops. And they're all physical education, sports psychology, business administration. You have to be the most overeducated basketball coach in America.
You know, I really feel there's value as a coach in being able to think outside the box, being able to think big picture. And I think a lot of times as coaches, we just get so enthralled with our day to day and getting ready for the next drill or getting ready for the next game or getting ready for the next recruit. And in the midst of that, I think you can just lose a lot of real value that's out there. And I learned a long time ago that, you know, you can learn from so many different types of people. And on top of that, I think you can learn from, you know, formal academic education. And the first master's degree I did because it was my job. I was a graduate assistant, which meant I had to go to school. But I learned so much in that program that when I got to Iowa, I was fascinated by sports psychology, and Jimmy Johnson and Pete Carroll and some coaches I really admire were really deep into sports psychology, and I did that. And then when I came to New Mexico State, you know, I kind of developed some mentors here, and, you know, a few of them were just like, you know, an MBA will really kind of change your life or your life's perspective. And it did. I mean, I did my MBA, and it was an altering experience on a lot of levels. It gave me a lot of skills and a lot of ways to look at things that I don't think a traditional coach would have. And then a couple of years after that, I basically started doing my PhD. So it's an educational leadership. And at the end of the day, I see myself as a leader and obviously working in education. So it kind of lent itself to some of the things I do as well. And I'd like to hope that all those experiences had just as much of an impact, if not more, than some championship basketball video that's online somewhere that I could have watched. You know, I just think this balances out the way I look at things and hopefully makes me a better coach.
Well, at Coach Calls Timeout, we talk a lot about leadership and we talk a lot about mentorship. You've had some stops there, and you've just mentioned a little bit of both of those subjects and how important both of them are. Who has been strong mentors for you along the way? I mean, I see that you've just added Lou Henson as a special advisor. Lou, for the people listening that might not be aware, is, I mean, he's been in the game forever, and he coached at New Mexico State and Illinois and taken teams to the Final Four. And what will he do for you? And what types of, who else has mentored you along the way that you value?
You know, I've obviously worked under some really good head coaches and some great assistant coaches as well. But man, I've had so many different mentors and people that have affected me in some way. I've really just tried to steal from people along the way and study them. I think the key to being a good student or protege is to really seek that out. I mean, active mentorship is really hard to find, and I never really waited around for someone to find me. I was just constantly seeking out people and trying to learn from them. I mean, really going all the way back. I mean, even Rob Ford, I learned a lot from Rob, and some of the things he was just really talented at. And just every step along the way, finding talented people. And I found just as many talented professors at the different universities that I've been at as I have coaches, you know, and trying to learn from them, and business leaders and political figures and entertainers, Marines. I mean, I can just go around and around of the various types of people that I've tried to learn from along the way. And I don't know if there's one or two that have been like a guiding force. I mean, some have obviously made greater impacts than others, but I've just always tried to just never stop trying to learn from other people.
And in the role that you just played as an assistant at New Mexico State, a couple of your major responsibilities, I mean, they call you a defensive coordinator. Maybe you can touch on what that entails. But also in the recruiting side of things, your ties are to the Toronto and GTA area, which is very evident in the players and especially the Canadians that have been brought into New Mexico State over the years. You know, some of your stronger ones, Daniel Mullings and Tyrone Watson and Sim Bular. Can you touch a little bit about, A, the defensive coordinator role and what that entails? And do you see those types of roles increasing? I mean, there never used to be a defensive coordinator in basketball. And secondarily, the recruiting responsibilities that you had and how much you've brought in the Canadians.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of that whole learning is me just going around and trying to learn from different programs. And, you know, I've been to Gonzaga, and I went to Michigan State. And remember, when I left Michigan State, obviously had a lot of different ideas and thoughts. But one of the things that Tom Izzo does is he splits up his coaching staff, his three assistants, into an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, and a special teams coordinator. And I remember coming back to New Mexico State and just kind of looking at how we did things, and I just thought that that was a more efficient way for us to kind of align our different coaching duties. So, you know, 5 years ago, we basically implemented that, and I kind of basically became the defensive guy and really kind of have done that over the past 5 years. So I'm currently trying to construct my staff right now, and I'd like to follow the same philosophy. You know, it's not always an easy fit given resources and given the profiles of the people you're looking at. But if I can, I'd still like to continue that method, because I do believe in it. And obviously, you know, Tom Izzo has had a tremendous amount of success. So that's kind of how that evolved. And it was great for me. I was able to really kind of take ownership in it and really dig in. And like I said earlier, just learn from as many people as I could. You know, I went to Lithuania to learn about the Lithuanian national team and how they go to the U.S. And I mean, there's so many different places I went to go learn things, but the bottom line is I do prescribe to the philosophy and hopefully will continue to do so given who I can hire. And then from a recruiting standpoint, I got lucky. I mean, that's what I tell a lot of people. I mean, part of where I'm at in the position I hold is because when I came down to the U.S. is right about when the Canadian recruiting scene started to turn, and I was kind of right place, right time. And, you know, recruiting Canadians went from being something that, you know, people maybe had an aversion to becoming sexy. And it was able to kind of help me establish myself as a recruiter, and obviously help Canadian kids at the same time. So it was kind of a good situation.
And I mean, you've got to have, if not the most international roster in the NCAA, it's got to be in the top two or three. I mean, you've only got five Americans currently listed on a 16-person roster. You got five Canadians, an Ivory Coast, a Colombia, a Mexican, two French, a Cameroon. I mean, how do you end up with people from all over the world coming to New Mexico?
You know, part of it is obviously the recruiting connections. You know, obviously, you know, I was many years ago able to travel around with our Canadian junior national team. You know, I kind of got close to Greg Francis, and we kind of spent some time together, and I would kind of go with them to various tournaments around the world. So I was able to kind of create some relationships there. And then inevitably, a lot of these Canadian high school players end up at the same high schools as a lot of other international kids. So as I was recruiting Canadian players at Huntington Prep and, you know, Finley Prep and all these different prep schools that kids went to, you know, you inevitably start to make relationships with those coaches, and they have kids from other countries as well. And then we, when we first got here, kind of inherited a, you know, it was a tough academic situation. We had kind of APR issues, which is kind of called the academic progress rate. And basically it forces schools to make sure their kids are being very aware and competent in the classrooms. And we kind of made a distinctive effort to say we weren't going to recruit junior college kids anymore. We weren't going to recruit, you know, maybe as much American kids anymore. We were going to kind of take some international kids because inevitably they're better students and they will look to be better students. So that was part of it as well. So that all kind of came together, and then we had success. We just kind of kept going with it, and that's kind of what brought us to where we're at now.
So as you move to the head coaching role, I assume you're going to have one of your assistants more as a heavy recruiter. Your ties, you know, were heavy in the Canadian area and especially in the GTA. Will that go away slightly now if you've got a guy who's more comfortable in some other area of North America?
I mean, possibly. I would never close it off myself because I'm obviously going to be involved in recruiting. And, you know, we've recruited kids from the GTA. We've recruited kids from Vancouver. We've recruited kids from Montreal. And I obviously still have very good relationships in those areas. And if the right kid comes available, we obviously, you know, jump on it. But at the same time, if we have talented assistants that bring guys to the table, that are better, then that's obviously where we'll go.
And you've spent, I mean, you talked a little bit about being with the junior national program and that, as you traveled the world, is that where a door opened up? I mean, at one point you were, helping out Costa Rica. How was that and how did you get involved there?
Yeah, no, our head coach and I, you know, met at a Final Four one year and just kind of started our relationship, and it ended up being kind of fruitful for both of us. And it was a really cool experience just to be involved in international basketball. Was interesting. It was a learning experience. It was humbling. It was a lot of different things, but it was definitely made me a better coach and allowed me to kind of broaden my scope.
So in Canada here in the CIS and the CCAA, we play FIBA rules. You guys play Federation rules. You have moved your shot clock to 30 seconds this past year, which for all of us who have been playing under FIBA for a bit now, we're happy to see your game speed up a little bit. What do you like and what don't you like about the FIBA rules? What do you wish maybe the NCAA would adopt?
You know, I think the way they've gone with the timeouts is really cool. I like the idea that, you know, the players inevitably will decide the game, and that really, really good coaches will prepare for those situations and not be able to just kind of micromanage the game and slow it down. I think the reality is, as our culture and society changes, you know, we're all in the entertainment business and we all want people to watch our games, whether you're at Humber College or whether you're at UCLA, everyone wants more people to go to their games right now. So we all need to be invested in making it an entertaining product. And I think we have our diehards. I think the same people that go to games at York or Sheridan or Mohawk or whatever are always going to go to those games. But we need to find a way to attract kind of those other people that are deciding about whether they want to go to a basketball game or a baseball game or a bowling alley or the movies or whatever. And to kind of swing those people into basketball, we've got to make it as entertaining as we can. So I think any little things that we do to improve their experience, I mean, I'm all for.
Now, you recently just came back from the NBA Combine. You have one of your players, Pascal Siakam, that's put his name into the draft. He hasn't hired an agent. Is that the first time you had been to the Combine, and what was your experience like?
Yeah, I mean, a college coach can only go if they have a player there. They're pretty private events. So that was the first time we'd ever had someone invited, and I was able to go, which was really, it was terrific. It was just good to kind of see the process, to kind of know the things that they go through and kind of prepare players for the future. So it was good. It was a really educational experience for me.
And your gut feel, is he back with you next year, or is he playing in the NBA?
Good question. I mean, I he has not given me an indication one way or the other. He's got some workouts he's just kind of finishing up, and I think on, you know, tomorrow and Wednesday is when he'll kind of wake up and make his final decision.
This Full Court Press is brought to you by Audible, the worldwide leader in audiobooks. As a listener to our podcast, you can go to audibletrial.com/coach to receive a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial with Audible. Choose from a wide variety of books to listen to on the go or while you're relaxing. They even have Coach K's best-selling books, like this one, Leading with the Heart.
It's important to begin using plural pronouns right away. Our instead of my. We instead of I. Us rather than me. I don't want the guys to be thinking this is my team, Coach K's team. I want them to believe it's our team.
You can show your support for this podcast by going to audibletrial.com/coach to start your free trial now. I'll put a link in the show notes, coachcallstimeout.com/7. That's the number 7.
Well, Paul, I appreciate your time today. I just want to finish real quickly here. We've got a segment that we always end with, and it's called Full Court Press. And these are just quick one-word, short-sentence answers to some real quick hitters. So
let's fire away.
All right. While recruiting, what's the first thing you look for in a kid?
Length.
What's the second thing you look for in a kid?
Shooting ability.
Do you prefer talking to the mothers or the fathers?
Mothers.
If you could be an assistant for a day, all the time you've spent as an assistant, if you could be an assistant day for any coach in any era and any sport, one day, who would you be an assistant for?
Nick Saban.
Past or present, name one player, if you could, for a day to coach.
Michael Jordan.
Do you prefer an up-tempo game or a grind-it-out game?
Depends on my team.
All right. You're up 3, 5 seconds to go. Other team has the ball. Are you fouling or are you playing it out?
I'm fouling.
And finally, give us something that you like to do outside of basketball.
I like golf. I wish I had more time for it.
All right. Well, hey, Paul, we really, really appreciate your time today. And all of us up here, we've been watching New Mexico State from afar anyways because of all the Canadian connections. But now we have one more reason to follow you, and we wish you all the best. And congratulations.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right.
There you have it, from grad assistant to assistant coach to head coach. Along the journey, he picked up 3 master's degrees and a boatload of mentors. It's amazing to think Coach Weir's journey began by essentially cold calling hundreds of schools looking for any way to get a foot in the door. It reminds me of something Jerry Howarth said in the previous episode.
Do what you love to do and let the money take care of itself. That's first and foremost. And then once you start to do that and you develop a certain proficiency, there's where you're supposed to be. You turn that hobby into a career, and then people will reward you later with a monetary gain.
We've said it before on this show. High-level coaches tend to have a perception of being this almighty presence that shouldn't be disturbed. But in reality, all they love to do is talk basketball. Don't be afraid to reach out to other coaches. You may find yourself a lifelong mentor. We started this podcast looking to reach as many coaches as possible and help them learn through shared experiences and maybe pick up a thing or two from each guest that we have. We appreciate all of our listeners, and to show our appreciation, we're offering you, the listener, a free 7-day trial to sample our members area full of plays, drills, and a coaching forum where you can ask anything you want. Just go to coachcallstimeout.com, click join now, and use the coupon code PODCAST to start your free 7-day trial. We add new plays and drills every single month, and if you decide you like what you see after the free trial, membership is only $2 a month after that. I'll provide a link in the show notes at coachcallstimeout.com/7. That's the number 7. Our next episode is the beginning of a 7-part series we call the Basketball Coaching Roadmap. It's going to be a fun and interactive discussion about the 7 areas where all successful coaches shine. Thanks, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks for the first item of the Basketball Coaching Roadmap, where we discuss the importance of communication.